Okay, let's call the meeting to order, meeting of June 20th, 2012. Mr. Wong, do we have a quorum?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Let's start out with the approval of the minutes from the June 6th meeting. Has everybody had a chance to review those? I had suggested to Lee Wong a couple, just not content-related, but how we word things. We had three motions, and I suggested that we use the word motion for those in the future. And maybe rather than the word denied, just say the motion failed or was approved. And he concurred with that. Are there any other changes noted?
No.
Okay, I entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are passed. Okay, the next item under general business is election of officers 2012-2013. I had talked to staff about this and a little concerned about 5 out of 9 people electing the officers for next year, and asked if there was any way we might defer that, particularly because the current vice chair, we're not assured, though I've heard now that maybe he is going to at least be interviewed. Is that?
I'm under consideration.
It's under consideration. So that made it a little awkward, but we checked, and the bylaws, it's a shell item. It says we have to basically hold the election today, even though I thought it might be more democratic to have 9 members voting in the future. So at this point, I guess we can start with nomination and election. So I'll throw it open, nomination for, we have 2, chair and vice chair. We don't have a treasurer, we don't have a secretary, we don't have a sergeant at arms. So, throw it open, nomination, I guess, for chair.
I would nominate Commissioner Erickson to continue in his role as chair of the Planning Commission.
Second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor, I won't vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you. I have 1 more year, so get ready. Okay, I'll open nominations for vice chair, and I would be honored to nominate Sean Gaffney as vice chair.
I'll second that motion, contingent upon his reappointment, I guess.
Assuming he's reappointed. If not, we'll come back and
revisit.
Okay. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, unanimous.
Oh, it's a junta.
That was easy.
Okay, let's move on down. Item number 2 today is code streamlining for 2012. And Ian, you...
Noah's going to...
Hmm?
Noah's going to take
the... Oh, Noah's going to do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Noah, I'll give you the floor then.
Thank you. Noah Yacker in Long Range Planning, Chair, Vice Chair, members of the Commission. I will be presenting 3 proposed code changes that are part of code streamlining effort. The intent of this code streamlining is to reduce barriers to the reuse of existing buildings. And these are changes that were introduced to you briefly at 2 previous Planning Commission meetings. The code changes are broken up into 3 different changes. One is a change to the Environmental Review, or SEPA, section of the code. The second is introducing some live-work and work-live uses and language to the code. And then the third is adding a parking exemption. To start out with the SEPA, these changes really are the result of recent state legislative action, which enacted Bill 6406. And this bill really encouraged the immediate use of higher thresholds for determining when SEPA review is required. This is kind of a round one, or you know, first part of a larger effort at the state level to update and overhaul CEPA. And I believe a commission has been formed in that effort. I think the purpose for that, the update of CEPA at the state level, is really acknowledging that a lot has changed since 1970 when the Environmental Protection Act was passed, and that we have a lot of other codes that address a lot of the same things that the Environmental Protection Act was meant to address. So such as the Growth Management Act of 1990, Critical Areas Ordinance, Shoreline Master Program. There also was a recent council resolution that adopted the use of the higher thresholds that were promoted by the state bill.
If I could just add, as an interim measure while this public process goes forward, so they just said we'll use the higher thresholds because the statute specifically authorized the use of these thresholds subject to going through a public process. And so the council took affirmative action to use the higher thresholds effective July 10th, I believe, when the statute's effective. And then, but if the public process leads to a different result, then that measure will be superseded.
So these changes would reflect those higher thresholds. So it would be three changes. Currently, environmental review is required for the construction or creation of four new residential units. That would go up to 20 units. Construction of an agricultural structure currently is at 10,000 square feet. That would go up to 30,000 square feet. And a new parking lot would go from 20 spaces to 40 spaces for when environmental review is required. The next part is the live work and work live. And this piece really includes an expansion of the home occupation use that currently exists in the code. The changes would be specific to the downtown and mixed-use districts, and they would allow some flexibility in these areas. The live-work part is closest to what we have for home occupation currently. This is your existing residential space that you're adding a commercial use or element to. The proposed changes in the downtown and mixed-use districts would allow this home occupation without being held to some of the current standards, such as being limited to only having employees that are within the family. And it would also allow up to a 10% increase in floor area without triggering a change of use. This home occupation, this live-work use, would also be exempt from adding any parking. The work-live, which would be a commercial space that you're adding a residential use or space to, would have the similar flexibilities as the live-work. One of the criteria for it, in order to be a work-live space, the residential space can be no more than 33% of the total floor area. Another thing is that it allows some flexibility in establishing that it's a historically significant building. And this is important because in doing so, that can provide some flexibility on the building code side of things as far as ADA requirements and other building code requirements. The third piece is a parking exemption. This is a parking exemption that would be for existing buildings, and it would be for commercial districts. By that, I mean commercial districts outside of the downtown and mixed-use districts, so the T, C1, C2, HM, and PDB. This exemption it basically allows a change of use within an existing building without providing additional parking, but it does not allow the removal of any existing parking on-site. And you can see in the blue areas, that's where this exemption would apply in the city. Currently, there are exemptions for existing buildings in the downtown and mixed-use districts. However, these exemptions are more broad. They go a step further in that they allow you to remove that existing parking. So not only is the building exempt, but you can remove any existing parking on site. Some of the recent changes, the downtown area previously had the IFSA area that still exists, but within that area there was no parking required for new or existing buildings. That area has been expanded. There also, as part of the 2012 annual amendment, parking for restaurants was reduced from 10 stalls per 1,000 square feet to 6 stalls per 1,000 square feet. And there was also a citywide exemption introduced for buildings constructed prior to 1953, and that's citywide.
Where there's no parking requirement at all for those buildings?
It would be similar in that there's no parking for a building constructed prior to 1953, but you can't remove existing parking. Okay. That's only in the downtown and mixed-use districts that you have that added level of exemption, essentially.
And there's no limit within the red area as to the maximum number of spaces that can be provided, right?
That is correct. So those are the three items. I would love to field any questions about them. I believe tonight we are requesting the Planning Commission to authorize the document that we provided for public review and also to set a public hearing date.
Okay, maybe
with that'll open up.
Would it be helpful if we go back through the three, start with the first one, and then we can address questions to that?
Sure.
Okay, any comments on SEPA? I endorse it. The one that really kind of seems kind of incongruous on the 40 parking spaces. We're doing all this downtown and throughout the city to discourage additional parking. And I see the exemption. I mean, SEPA talks about things like light and glare. And if you're in an apartment building, you kind of like to know if the guy is tearing down that house and what he's going to do on the site. And is he going to put in 40 parking spaces just like that? I mean, I see the Joe Diamonds and the Republic parking is just wringing their hands and saying, hey, this is great. It also seems incongruous with trying to discourage additional parking. I mean, that's what bothers me. We have a policy citywide of trying to discourage parking, and here we're going to make it easier. You're not going to have any notification. You're not going to address surface water runoff. I mean, we just dealt with a whole bunch of tree growth provisions to do.
Are you sure about that? I mean,
well, I don't know. It's the checklist that you typically use to...
Basically, if I may, Mr. Chairman, from an order, the reason that Mr. Gaffney responded in the same way, I was the same thing, because we've got very specific stormwater requirements for new surface parking lots.
Right.
And the landscaping requirements. So we've got... And so the landscaping should be addressing light and glare, and the stormwater should be handled through current stormwater standards. So that's the rationale for not having to do a site-specific review.
Okay, but there's no notification then.
That's absolutely correct.
That's true.
Okay. There will be no notification to surrounding property owners of knowing it'll happen. I just think it's inconsistent with what we're trying to do with parking in the city.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, I mean, what we're asking for this evening for this package is to go out for public comment. And so we've got broad notice. There may be comments coming in, and the commission may recommend to council something different than 40 spaces. I mean, all we're trying to do tonight is to move this forward for public review.
Are these levels mandated by the Senate bill?
You basically have minimums below what you can't. Well, you can. The maximum you can go to is that, for instance, on residential is up to 20. We're currently at 4. The current regulations say you can't go above 20. But the state, this new bill, as Noah was saying, did set up a commission that by the end of the year will make some more recommendations. And so that 20 may become 40, the 40 may become 80. That's all up for discussion this year.
But these are just thresholds for triggering a full environmental impact setup.
Just a checklist.
And these thresholds didn't change at the state level. It's just they're allowing cities and other agencies that made them more stringent to put them up to the maximum thresholds now in the interim until they do something in December with modifying the checklist. Is that correct?
That's well stated. Thank you.
So these are interim. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Mr. Gaffney.
Don, you bring a good point up, and I've been dealing with this in Olympia, actually, and working on the larger SEPA effort. And what I'm finding out is people are relying on SEPA as a notification tool, and it is a good one, no question about it, but it's not really the intent of the legislation. So, you know, if we do have a deficiency notice, we should pick that up somewhere in city regulations, just like we have with stormwater and all the other things that over the last 20 years we've been pretty aggressive at regulating. So, I mean, I look forward to this. Didn't we make an attempt at this maybe 2 years ago and sort of stopped?
You're exactly right. The issue came up with Public Works Engineering because it was helpful, again, for the notification, for the review, to have a checklist even on smaller projects. But we consulted with Public Works and the recommendation from staff as we move forward with the higher levels, and the council endorsed that.
So I'll be looking forward to the changes. I think it makes sense, but it'll be
administratively, it's no question.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm convinced with the level of layers of regulatory structures that we've been dealing with over the last quite a few years, it's picked up a lot of the things, a lot of the concerns that were not addressed 40, 35 years ago.
Do we address light and glare? Now, I look out at a parking lot 3 blocks away. It's a former auto dealership parking lot. And during the winters, where the trees are defoliated, that thing is light glare. It goes at least 3 blocks.
In Stadium?
Huh?
Is that the one in Stadium?
It's the one across from Thriftway?
Yeah, I used to live. That's why I asked. There are currently design standards. Currently in the design standards, there are there's specific language about glare. Talks about the number of luminaires and things like that.
Some cities require that it be contained on site, so that you hood the source so it's not projecting it.
Yeah. So the example of the parking lot and stadium, though, it's such an older lot that obviously not up to current standards. So. But we do have more protections in our current code.
Okay, Scott, did you have another comment?
No, it just had to do with the interim nature and what happens during the interim period. I guess these standards apply.
The council passed a resolution last week to use the higher standards in the interim. So there's a longer explanation, which I will spare you, but that was the compromise, which council said to staff, go ahead and staff could have used the higher levels at their own discretion, whatever that meant. If the council told us not to do it, didn't tell us not to do it, so we decided to ask permission rather than forgiveness. Mm-hmm. So the council said, go ahead and use this while you go through the public process.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Tina, Teresa, any comments?
I'm comfortable with it. For me, my concern is that notice, and I'm thinking of the agency side of it, because agencies do use the SEPA notice as a tool to reply back to the city and communicate potential needs that development may trigger. Mm-hmm. So how we respond to that in the future when it moves forward, or if it moves forward.
Okay, so today we'll just set a public hearing date on this at the end of our meeting.
That's what we're hoping for.
Okay.
But along the line of Tina's comment, is it possible then to provide some other mechanism for notice?
I think that was the vice chair's thought that maybe when after the conclusion of the public process, the commission recommends that there be some online or some sort of pushing notices out to people. That may be something you, not trying to get ahead of things, but you may recommend something like that as an alternate to deal with those issues.
And you may hear about that through the comment period.
Well,
from different
may
agencies.
Hear it from Pierce Transit of all agencies.
I was going to say that I think that in relationship to the parking lots and the construction of residential dwelling units, when you start getting up to 20 units and 40 parking spaces, you are going to trigger some notification to some of the agencies just because of the stormwater codes going to Department of Ecology and other agencies. So it's the local citizenry that maybe the idea of having something on a website that's available to them, but they're not going to get notification within 200 or 300 or 400 feet like they would in the past.
Or the neighborhood districts.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With SEPA, though, we don't mail SEPA notices out, so that would have been, they're available if you know what you're looking for, but there's no mailed notice with SEPA. Just direct to citizens.
Do you publish in the paper or anything?
Yes, in the Daily Index, I believe.
Okay. But again, it's really for the informed, and you know, perhaps the recommendation is we do something more sophisticated as far as pushing out information to people if they ask to be noticed.
I know parking next to apartments can be problematic. So, okay, maybe we move on to the next one then. This is one I really endorse the concept, but I talked to staff earlier today and I felt that I had to go online to look up and find out what these were. I mean, I remember years ago, Woodinville was kind of innovative up in King County, and they did some kind of work-live on a project. And I went online, and I saw L.A. had a number of these. San Francisco had some. The majority of them appeared to be in new construction, often condos going 500, 750. Thousand. I think part of the intent here is going to be more rehabilitation of existing structures. But what I told staff is I felt a little uncomfortable because I would have liked to have seen some examples, some illustrative material, maybe pulled offline of what other communities are doing. I kind of see the Planning Commission as kind of a hearing board before it goes out to public. So we want to get our comfort level up where we say, oh, yeah, you know, this is what it is, we understand it, looks great, you know, move it out. The other concern I know is I'd feel a lot better if I had a letter or something from the fire department or the building official saying, yeah, we thoroughly endorse this at this point. My concern is if we were doing a trial, just say downtown or just in the historic districts, for 2 years where we could see and work out the bugs, because I think there are going to be a fair number of bugs to be worked out with something like this. But as it's currently proposed, it includes all the mixed-use centers, right? It's a big, you know, it's everything in green here. It's a big chunk of the city. Uh-huh. And to me, it's a tremendous incentive. It's a great incentive for things like historic preservation because you can start focusing that energy into those buildings. I think when you put it citywide, you dilute that potential a fair amount. But I think the biggest concern right now is, to me anyway, is kind of this. I would like more information on it. I'd like to see a packet. I understand we're trying to reduce paperwork. We talked about that. But I think it would help you sell it when it goes to council and when it goes to public to pull in some examples from other jurisdictions, and apparently there's a whole bunch out there. Anyway, I'm just sharing my views on this. And I have a 5-year degree in architecture from Berkeley, and if I had to go online to look it up, you know, to see what the difference between live, work, and work, live was, and see what these spaces actually were looking like under new construction. I think there are probably a lot of people who are in the same.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, if I could, mm-hmm. You were good enough to give me a heads up this afternoon, and one of the delights about being an acting division manager is I get to be a buffer between the commission and where this idea started from, which the city manager and my boss, Peter Huffman, the assistant director, met, and they decide what they want to do is to, just exactly as you did happen with the medical cannabis issue, is to ask you to deal with the land use issues, put some parameters around where the flexibility is. And it's pretty, I mean, I know there's a very big picture what LA is doing, other cities are doing. All we're really saying here is, can we provide some more flexibility for home occupation? Can we provide some more flexibility as not requiring more parking spaces? Can we put as a reasonable standard that 33% of your workspace can be used for living? So that's the land use piece. There are internal staff committees that are meeting every 2 weeks to work with the building official, because the building code has equivalency language, and as Noah said, historic structure gives you a little bit of flexibility. So they're exploring that in parallel. They're not doing what you want them to do. They're doing it in parallel. And then the other piece is the discussions going ahead with the fire marshal as to what flexibility can be provided there. What we were trying to do here was put some parameters around, just like the medical cannabis issue, this is the land use piece. We will be able to circle back with you with updates as to what's happening with the building code, but the real, and this is my language, so the message I think that the staff want to, always get in trouble who you're speaking for, what the staff really wanted to do was say, can we put some land use parameters around this and let these other discussions continue? And we have so many older buildings in the city that are chronically underutilized that we just wanted to say we're open for business and say to people, and we have some in the audience today, come on in. It's worth your while to put an application in. It costs money, architectural time. Put your application in, see if the building official can work with it. And then I totally support the chair's notion that we need to do some, get our feet in the ground, do some particular projects. And what LA did was, and I didn't put that, we've got all that information available to you, but we're taking, if we have our druthers, we're taking baby steps. We just want to start down this path. What LA did was, after they did 100 buildings and worked through them all, they revised their code to say, here's how you can do it, based on 100 or so examples. We just want to get a few applications going.
Along the lines of what Don is, for his illustration purposes, if you can show examples where you've had, you know, darn near derelict buildings, but because of provisions like this, you know, there's been new life breathed into them, that would be great to see anything like that. I mean, not now, but...
We can certainly do that.
Because I think that's out there. It is
out there, and we've asked the building official is working on that, but it's just a timing issue. I've been urged to do my best to move this forward.
I'm comfortable moving forward. I just think it makes the sale. I mean, it's just really convincing.
But I think what we want to do is we don't really want to pick up something from California's building codes, and which we could do. We've got the entire LA downtown code. We really want to work with the fire marshal, with the building official, come up with local examples. The building official is actually working through the Spaceworks designs to see if what some of the options, and we fully plan to have some of those for you to look at.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just thinking, you know, that's going to help sell the package, you know, because a lot of people have no idea.
Right.
You know, and you put a definition out there, there are no sketches, you know.
Right.
But some codes have a lot of illustrations. This is what it is. Here's what a mezzanine of 30% looks like. Some of
We can certainly do that.
Okay. The other issue. Oh, go ahead, Tina.
I was just going to echo. I went to the Municipal Research Center last night, and I was looking this up as well because I wanted to be more familiar with it. I think we've all received some comments too on the historic buildings and limiting to that. What would help me would be a map on how many parcels or properties that might be. I mean, is that really limited, or would this be all buildings in these areas?
As far as the land use provisions go, we're talking about we met with Historic Tacoma and other stakeholders, and they urged us to not just to limit to historic buildings, but to older buildings, because we have such a huge stock of older buildings. And where the historic significance comes in is, as was stated, is if it is designated. And we have our existing maps, but the language in the proposal makes it clear that the Landmark Preservation Officer, Mr. McKnight, can use his discretion a little bit. That would broaden it a little bit. So we're just trying to open up the discussion, and we're not trying to close up the discussion, because, again, as the Commission is well aware, if you go with broad notice, you can always recommend something less than that. But we were asked by a number of stakeholders to start it broadly. And the commission may say, after public comment, no, we want to recommend, like the parking spaces, we don't think you should go to 40. But we know we had an issue with we had an issue 3 months ago with public notice, and I'm pledged not to do that again.
Teresa, did you have a comment?
No, I'm generally in support of this idea and this concept for land use regulations, and I did too have to go and look up more information. So that repeated piece.
I was just trying.
It's such a small thing, but we're looking for just a little bit more explanation than a couple sentences.
I will do better. Yes, I will do better.
Scott, did you?
No, I generally support the concept. I was looking at, you know, live, work, work, live, and trying to look at from the description, the distinction between those two, and it was a little challenging. So.
Yeah, there are a lot of examples online. The other question I asked of staff is, in the mixed-use centers, we created a lot of, you guys did, it was pretty well done when I got on here, a lot of incentives, urban design-related types of incentives, bonuses. And I was a little concerned about what I was asking staff is, has anybody looked at how this will affect the bonuses that we're trying to encourage, improve streetscape, canopies, transparency, and things that are bonus, when this becomes another bonus in that mixed-use center?
And again, thank you for the advance notice. And so I did talk to Brian Boudet, who did the staff work on the mixed-use centers, and ask him to come up and maybe give a little answer to that question.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Boudet.
Thank you, Chair. Nice to see you all. So as far as incentives, I mean, this in the mixed-use centers, the specific incentive program that was created was obviously the height bonus, which had a whole bunch of different opportunities that people could utilize to exercise and get additional height. And that was a whole range of things about structured parking and about providing art and providing retail on the first floor and things, encouraging all sorts of things that are beneficial to the community and the vision for the mixed-use centers. I guess I would say really the live work and the work live, certainly in the mixed use centers, there is the general desire to have a mix of uses to make living and working close together. It doesn't get much closer than what we're talking about here, but in a compact nature. And so I think from a vision, intent, goal perspective, the concept of live work and work live is very much in tune with what is intended to be achieved in the mixed use centers. And I don't directly see any obvious conflict between the types of things trying to achieve either from a design perspective or from an incentive in the bonus program and really what's being discussed here. So, I mean, the idea of if you went into a mixed-use center and you either built a building or converted a building and you wanted to have a antique shop on the first floor and you wanted to live in the back of it, perfectly fantastic as far as the mixed-use center's regulations, vision, and all of that is concerned. So,
I guess what I read this afternoon is there, I think, is a 10% increase in floor area that's allowable, and there's also a height increase that's also granted as part of this. There's no penalty for height as long as it's not occupied.
Right, the no roof structures. The no roof structures, that's correct.
So the at some level, I think, Ian, you can correct me. At some level, this is basing in part on how the building code looks at floor area and things like that as part of what's trying to be achieved here. I don't think this gets to the idea of allowing additional height above whatever the height limit is or affecting the height bonus program. It's really allowing you to put structure on the roof without having to really impact or being considered additional space that you might have to meet a lot of standards for. So,
the exact language is such structure shall not be used for living or working quarters. And right. So in order to get, you need the bonus in order to make them into living or working quarters. But what a number of communities have done is rooftop gardens or exercise areas, probably not very suitable for this climate, but
we encourage them.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think the real concern is about taking these sorts of things, and I want to add a little bit of space, and because I want to add a little bit of space, I have to do parking, and I have to do design, and I have to go down the long list of all the requirements that could theoretically be triggered. Some of those are building requirements. Some of those are fire requirements. Some of those are land use requirements. I think this, in large part, is obviously directly focused on the land use ones, but none of those really have to do with what the ultimate height limit is for the project. It's just really saying, hey, you could add some space without us making you add parking, without us making you meet certain design requirements or trigger certain things like that. So giving a little bit of flexibility to those sort of a mezzanine or those kinds of spaces.
And I suspect this tool wouldn't be used by people. I mean, the whole idea is to get people into existing structures without a lot of capital output. And just sort of work with what's there. I mean, there may be situations where they want to do some addition, but I'm guessing that would be the minority of people using it. That's just my hunch.
So I mean, so the thrust, we were hoping to get some enthusiasm from the commission and the public, and then use that to then encourage other folks to take a look at the same issue, especially if the council takes this land use piece and says, you know, we really encourage the use of existing buildings. That then sets the stage for other departments to jump in and see how they can help. But we felt we needed to start somewhere, and,
sure.
And we picked the Planning Commission.
Okay, you've started. I felt I would feel more comfortable if this came back another time, and there was actually a packet that so we saw what was going to go out to the public before it actually went out, because usually we have that opportunity.
I mean, it's the commission's prerogative. I mean, I'm absolutely sincere about that. I mean, the language that is in here is all we're proposing. We don't have a meeting next 2 weeks from now because of the 4th of July. So, but we can easily send out a package of material to you next week to look at, and we can make it available online as part of our public notice process.
If everybody could go online, that's fine too. I would like to see some illustrative materials.
I'll do anything if I can keep the schedule.
I'm not comfortable with this language going out, but yeah, if you say if it could be accented somewhere along the line.
We'll do it next week.
Then you can keep your schedule.
Right.
Thank you. I can go back upstairs again.
Anybody else concur with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to the third item.
The parking.
If I could, I mean, you know, I think part of the discussion is going to be we have major incentives in the mixed use, in the downtown and mixed use centers. The public will have a chance to weigh in as to whether that incentive should be expanded to commercial districts. I think what the map shows is really not that many districts and where there are underutilized buildings. It seems to make sense to give it a try. So that's I guess we'll find out from the public what the reaction is. But our thought is that it just might bring half a dozen more buildings back into use. Nothing more ambitious than that.
I think we will get a little blowback maybe from some of the neighborhoods we already are. I'm thinking like 6th Avenue where there's a dearth of parking. The other comment I had was the often, from an urban design planning standpoint, we try to reduce curb cuts, and we try to encourage, if somebody is going to put in parking, I remember a project when I worked up in Vancouver, B.C., in their Chinatown, and there was hardly any parking, and people double parked on the streets, and all it was to, when a new development came in and was going to provide parking, was to encourage them to provide extra parking to help meet the obligation of some of the surrounding property owners. But the way I mentioned to Ian is if you allow somebody then to bump that parking out, a guy buys the building and says, geez, I don't understand why we have all this parking, and takes it out, there could be an impact on some of the surrounding properties, particularly those people who are dependent with long-term leases or whatever. So.
This parking thing is so complicated, and Noah put the chart together at the back, and I still can't follow it. Just in case any of you have difficulty with it, but in this particular case, you won't be able to get rid of your parking, unless, and this is where the exception comes in, unless it's surplus parking. So if you currently have a retail store with 30 spaces and the current code requires you to have 20, you can get rid of 10.
If it's surplus.
If it's surplus.
Okay, but this doesn't say it's parking for an existing building. Can be removed, and it says yes, 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 yes. Okay. I was thinking maybe a footnote or something, an asterisk on that to clarify.
If whatever we can do, we will do. But
so in those for all those yeses, I mean, that is true. So for in the mixed use districts, the downtown, and even the smaller, the reduced parking area, the existing parking can be removed for an existing.
Yeah. If it's over any requirement.
Any existing parking. Now, the what's different, and that's the first column, is that the definition of an existing building in these districts is different. So for downtown, it's the establishment of the downtown center, which is the year 2000. Mixed use districts, commonly it's 1996, but you know there are some that are more recent. So there is somewhat of a fluctuation on what is an existing building. However, if you meet that definition of an existing building in the mixed use or downtown districts, you could essentially remove the parking that you have. Now, if you're removing it with an addition, you might have to provide parking for the addition, so you wouldn't necessarily be able to just build over everything because the addition may require parking.
I was thinking if you had an asterisk that said parking from an existing building can be removed, yes, 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 but the asterisk would say not if currently required for uses in an adjacent or another building. But
I don't think that's the case, though.
If it were for an adjacent, you know, parking for an adjacent building, there would be a shared parking agreement that would be recorded in with the city, right. And so that would preclude that from happening. Oh. Yeah. But if you had two, yeah, that like.
So if you had an aspect that just said yep. that, you know, okay. were there existing agreements?
Okay. Mm-hmm. I like the way you just worded it, because there could be all sorts of agreements, unless there is a specific agreement to the contrary. That could cover multiple situations.
Right.
Thank you. Including handicap accessible parking and some other things. That's great. Okay. So this is the 20th version of this table, just so you know.
So it's not the last.
Probably the only first that we've seen.
Right? Well, it's the first one you've seen, but we went... It's
true. Mr. Winship, did you have a comment?
No, thanks.
Anybody else on this?
I just like the idea of this. There's a couple areas in the county where it's small lots platted in an urban fashion, commercial, and this parking situation has just killed redevelopment. You know, I don't know where the sweet spot is to make it work, but nothing's happening because they cannot meet parking because of the amount of land available. And they're working with what they have and the lot sizes, so I'm glad we're taking a close look at it because I think some exceptions is going to be very helpful.
I think we all endorse the concept of reducing parking requirements. Though with that 40 spaces, I can see Joe Diamond and Republic Parking wringing their hands and figuring out where they're going to put those lots to make up the difference.
I mean, Mr. Wright, I mean, I really do. The message we want to convey is we want to streamline the code. Doesn't mean we want to do bad
right,
things.
Right.
And so I think that's the commission's role, is to see whether it's improved notice, whether it's everything but the parking spaces, whatever.
Right.
I mean, that's. But the message we're trying to get out is we want to be more efficient. We want to be more streamlined.
Right. And we're endorsing that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So, if there are no additional comments on that, you're recommending that we hold a establish a public hearing date for July 18th. Is that?
Yes, please.
Okay. So I'd entertain a motion that we. Establish a public hearing date on these three items for July 18th, 2012.
So moved.
Okay. Second?
Second.
All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you.
Okay. You can go upstairs.
Peter was only partially joking.
I was waiting for the tap dancing to begin.
Okay. We're done with code streamlining. Communication items. Thank you, Noah.
Thank you.
Medical cannabis public hearing. The City Council will conduct a public hearing Tuesday, June 26th at approximately 5:30 p.m. I plan on attending that. That will be in the Council chambers. Others are welcome to attend if you would like. Our 4th of July, we have been graced with a cancellation of the meeting, so that's probably good for everybody. 2013 Annual Amendment of the Planning Commission is accepting applications, as we noted last time, for amendments to the Comprehensive Plan and Land Use Regulatory Code for 2013. The deadline, again, is Friday, June 29th, 5 p.m. Encourage your constituencies, make sure they know this. Oftentimes people come in late, as what was the dog one?
Yep. But we're open for business, and we're trying to be responsive.
Right.
So the our tentative agenda for the 18th is code streamlining public hearing that we just set the date for. And then we'll review whatever 2013 annual amendments have come in at that time. Do we know now? Is there a basket full? Or?
We haven't received any applications.
I'm pretty sure we have one coming private. But then
we know
stuff
like
on there.
At least one?
At least one, I think.
That's it?
But that's just private. There's numerous things on the docket, but you have seen the work program. Yeah. Don't worry, the list will be
good. It will grow. And there will undoubtedly be two or three moratoriums.
Yeah.
Okay, comments by long range planning.
Thank you for indulging me this evening.
Any comments by planning commissioners? Okay, entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Okay. Great.